Now, but let me get the Cherokee thing straight.
Okay, no, let's wait till we get to that, all right?
Okay, all right. We're not.
Yeah.
Okay.
First question I got for you is, I don't know where you were born.
I was born right here in Glasgow, Missouri.
Oh, yeah? So this is...
At home.
Okay. In the house at home.
At home.
Yeah.
No doctor, midwife.
What did your folks do for a living?
My dad worked on the railroad. Okay. My mother was a domestic.
So your dad would catch work right here in Glasgow on this line?
Yeah, he would take a train from here and go. They went all the way to Illinois.
Yeah.
Along this line right here. And they went west across the bridge. And
Does a train coming through town now blow its horn every time it hits Glasgow? Okay. I think I can hear it when it hits Glasgow, and then it blows again at Steinmetz.
Yes.
And then at Armstrong.
Yes.
And I have a saying where I always say, there goes the other hard-working Howard County and my friend the train. Well,
I had a lot of friends that grew up with that train.
Yeah.
Matter of fact. But that's where we hear, that's where we work.
Yeah. They were probably born in the late 20s, your folks?
Yes.
And so that's getting to be...
Yeah, just kind of.
That's getting close to being 100 years ago that they were born.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And were they born right here in this community too, you think?
Yeah, my dad and mom. My mom was born in Salisbury, I think.
Okay.
And... then she was kind of adopted by another family, the Johnsons.
Your great-grandparents then were probably slaves in this area?
They were part of the first slaves that came to this area. Okay. Not probably, for sure. Mm-hmm. I found that out since we talked. I made sure that I had it right.
What family did they work for here, any idea?
My mother worked for the Fifes.
Okay.
But a few families. She done domestic work, but she worked for the Fifes mainly. At Armstrong. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yeah, I know the Fife family.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And my dad worked on the railroad, so.
Right. Yeah. What kind of work would your grandfather have done locally? Was he working in agriculture?
Restaurateur. He was selling, he had a truck that he used down by the Henderson, behind the Henderson drugstore.
Okay.
And he was selling food products.
Was he the cook or your grandma?
I'm sure he was.
Huh?
I'm just sure he was.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any of that food ever? Were you down there
I was so young.
Okay, no memories of that then.
But not really.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure I had some of the food there, but right. It just kind of stays in the family. And there's not a whole lot to eat. During that time period, we were doing only limited food to eat. Like the throwaways of the pig and so on, chitterlings and all that other stuff. I didn't do well with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who were the clientele at this restaurant?
Those were white people.
Okay.
Of course, my grandparents, great-great-grandparents, they were enslaved by the white people. Mm-hmm. And the people that they were enslaved by, when they migrated here, was from Virginia. Okay. I pinned that down.
Okay, yeah. When would that have been? Probably mid-1800s?
Of course, it would have to have been.
Right.
It was the establishment, during the same establishment time as the Little Dixies. The counties all along the Missouri River, because of shipping, the selling of the hemp, which was the cash crop, and all the other little things. They had to go down the Mississippi River, that Missouri and the Mississippi and all that to New Orleans and all that to be exported.
Any idea how processed the hemp was before it went down the river to somewhere?
It was raw. You have to call it raw hemp because they hadn't made the rope yet.
Okay.
And the ropes that they made was the non-stretchables. So they would break before they stretched.
Huh.
And they were more brittle.
Okay. And the fibers and the hemp were in the big stalk of the plant, I guess.
In the weaving of that, they would tear down the big stalk and weave the hemp together to make the rope. I know that. I mean, seen that. I didn't know it then because I was, you know, too young.
Probably the hemp fibers being made into rope, that may have gone all the way down to New Orleans to get processed that way?
Yes. That's what it shipped today. Straight, yeah. Everything went down the river.
How widespread do you think the hemp production was? Was it kind of localized in Howard County?
No. No, it was all over the place. It was all over the place because even today, it grows wild.
Right.
All over Howard County. And all over the other counties, all the way down to the river. I mean, all the way down to New Orleans. It still grows wild there. Of course, it's not this thing that they have, they're selling on the market today. But because it's weak, you know, burn out, so to speak.
Is that a perennial plant that comes back on its own every year?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, it's just let it grow. When the stalk is big, you go chop it up, put it into bundles, throw it on the...
Ship it down the river.
Ship it down the river. Right. Huh. I wonder what the population of Howard County was then that was involved in that.
It was pretty good size because... It was one of the more populated counties.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, the most of the populations in all of the Little Dixie counties, there was a newly settled counties in Little Dixie, were majority black slaves.
I've often heard that Glasgow is kind of a center of tomato canning too. Do you know anything about that? Have you ever heard that?
I didn't know that, but okay. I mean, it was very fruitful when it comes to tomatoes. Tomato, watermelon, kind of stuff like that. It was quite fruitful. Growing up, I remember all that. I mean, always had it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't long before the railroad came through. It was first after the river.
Okay.
It was the next highway. It was...
I wonder when the flip came that tobacco became more prominent than hemp being grown in
that had to be the later, way much later, I would think.
Yeah.
First thing first, you have to have something to sell, and the first thing that headed the market was cotton, hemp, and those things needed in the industry, okay. Like the boating, especially the boating industry, because that was the highway, and that's the anchors and all the things that they make in the sails and things that are needed on a boat.
So your grandparents were very involved in agriculture.
Yes.
And then your dad worked for the railroad, mm-hmm. and your mom is a domestic. And did your dad fall into the railroad work kind of easy and young, do you think? Do you always remember him as being...
No, I don't know about the young part. I can't, because I'm the youngest in the family, so I can say that he was real young at the time he got into it. Because he was hardworking. He done all kinds of stuff. Hmm. Just to survive, he did. And And he I think he died somewhat prematurely because of his hard work.
I see.
And diet, of course. Because he died from a heart attack, so.
I see. What age would he have been when your dad passed away?
But my dad? Yeah. 65.
65.
Just retired.
Huh. Wow.
Maybe 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. It seems like I've known a lot of railroad workers over the years, and it seems like they retire and then they die.
It was done. It was done.
You noticed that too?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I have. I noticed there's a whole lot of railroad workers. I mean, all his friends and that worked on the railroad. Everybody, they worked so hard. And the labor was very hard back in those times. Very, very difficult. In the winter and all of that. I mean, it was. They didn't have any machinery.
Right. And I think they probably were exposed to a lot of chemicals too.
Yes.
Because they were.
Oh, especially because the curing of the railroad ties in themselves.
Right.
You know, to keep them from rotting and being eaten away with the bugs, you know, they had to spray them with some pretty rough stuff. I'll soak them. They used to soak them in creosote.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that's a bad thing. And they still do.
And then just fighting all the brush and, you know, killing all the weeds along the tracks.
All the time. Yeah. All the time. They had just to keep the base, rock base, under the tracks.
Yeah.
That had to be a pretty arduous task to kill, to keep it dead, because they didn't want anything to happen. You know, because weeds move things. The roots can move rocks and all that kind of stuff, and the ties. And when they're out of line and the wheels hit them, with all their weight, they're gone. So, it was pretty arduous.
We have a railroad bridge just down the dock seat from where we live, and it was built in 1902, the bridge. Now there was one before that. You can see the remains of the one before it. But the one bridge now was built in 1902. And we used to take kids from Armstrong down there. It's 60 foot from the tracks down to the water level of the docksy. So it's a very tall bridge.
I'd say.
Yeah. And we used to take the kids from Armstrong down there and we'd say, so this was built in 1902. How do you think they went about building it? And then they'd go wild coming up with ideas of just the type cranes that it took. And they really were fascinated by the idea of back in 1902.
I saw some old trestles that were built, like where my mother grew up in her younger years. And it was a railroad line they came in from Saline County, Salisbury, up that way, they came in. And this old trestle remained there for a long, long time. I even walked across it as a kid. I didn't know any better.
Well, last summer in June, we had 22 inches of rain up there. And it affected that bridge by, it didn't affect the bridge, but the approach to it was very, precipice, let's put it that way, and it caused a lot of it to slough off because of all the rain. And so then they had to come in and they had piles and piles of huge rock that they put in there to replace that approach. And they drove in all these iron pilings to hold it in place. And they worked around the clock for about 4 weeks trying to get that thing back in place. And while they were working on it, there was no train. So it was quite an event. And all night long, they'd worked around the clock. All night long, you'd hear them driving these pilings in with some big old apparatus crane. It was quite an event for us seeing that group, all the work they put into keeping that bridge open.
I imagine.
Yeah, quite a deal.
No, with no modern tools.
Right. Was there much talk amongst your family about your history and where you came from and how it all came about?
Well, that was that just in general, not just in the family, but, you know, everybody had something to contribute to conversations about
the past, the most recent past and the hardships.
Yeah.
That you couldn't miss it.
Oh.
It was devastating because we stayed very poor for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, just how it was. All the families had a struggle. Any black family could definitely struggle. And that's just how it was.
Yeah.
No credit, no any, you know, just a struggle. I remember a struggle for us as a kid. And we had it better than a lot. Yeah, we had it better than a lot of people. But I do remember the struggles.
Just because your dad's wages out on the railroad weren't...
That's right.
We're better than what a lot of folks were getting.
Oh, absolutely. Well, any wages were, pretty much, if you had a... But the railroad was the best paying around. So then, because... how much they didn't have an industrial base, big, right. Heavy industrial base. Mm-hmm. Not here. It just didn't happen like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably your dad worked pretty long hours on the railroad.
He'd
get home
gone.
About 7 o'clock?
No.
He wouldn't
no,
even
Oh,
home.
No, he would be gone for a week, week or two.
Wow.
Every time he'd go, he'd be gone for a week or two.
And then your mom is a domestic. Would she be home every night or not?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I expect there was a lot of raising of each other as kids, though, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Your sisters.
Absolutely.
Your sisters did a lot around the house.
We all did.
Yeah.
Now, my sisters worked just as hard as we did, and we had a family truck. That was a wheelbarrow.
Mm-hmm. Would you heat your house with coal or wood?
Coal,
or?
Wood. My father would have them drop these, whoever was cutting trees and bring them by the house, drop them off, and then we would take over. We had all the saws, all the splitting moss and everything, and we, as kids, I mean, little kids, we chopping up the wood, splitting it up, carrying it into the basement and all that, and the coal.
Would y'all have owned your house? Or were you renting something?
Renting.
Okay.
Renting. We finally got to buy. My father finally bought a house. It was late. It was kind of late. He died in that house. Right after he retired. That wasn't all that long. It wasn't a long period of time we're talking.
Yeah. Do you know which house? Do you have memories of the house? Do you know where it was? We're sitting in it. It was on this
you
spot.
And I right now. No, okay. Right here.
Huh.
Right here.
On the west end of Market Street, huh?
not the end, in the middle.
Okay.
Just before you go up the hill, get up the hill starts really going. This
right.
is it, right here.
Oh, yeah.
Remember it well.
How many siblings did you have?
Eight. I mean, there was eight of us, and well, there were 10, but two died early. And I didn't know them. We didn't. Mm-hmm. The rest of us didn't get to know them, but then. And there were eight of us going along. Now there are three.
Start telling me about your schooling.
Well, I had a few problems early.
Okay.
Because I had a rocket. I was just into everything. And I didn't try to get sit down until Mrs. Mary Bell Elgin got with me with that fist and her finger.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
She poked in the head with that finger and smacked in the hand, felt like a big iron railroad track. She was a big lady. But and she was a disciplinarian if there ever was one.
What was her name again?
Mary Bell Elgin.
Mary Bell Elgin.
She was from Armstrong.
Huh. And she was the only teacher in that elementary school?
No, she was one of three.
Oh, one of three. Okay.
Yeah, one of three. And I venture to say she was the toughest of the three.
Huh.
In my opinion, she was.
Yeah.
But she was good for me because when I come out of there, I was reading very well. I didn't miss a beat.
Huh.
It was because of her.
Wow. How many kids would have been in the elementary school when you were there? Any guess? Maybe 60?
At least.
Okay.
At least. Well, let me see. And if you count all the grades that were there, because it was all the way to the seventh grade. And yeah, seventh, eighth. No, it was all the way to the ninth grade at one point.
Okay.
And that's quite a few, though, mm-hmm. our students. When you look at it, because the little school is right on the hill.
The building is still there, isn't it? No, or not?
The building's
there. Okay, I remember it being there.
Yeah, it used to be there. It was like a 3-room school. Three
rooms?
Three teaching rooms.
Right.
Not counting the restrooms. Mm-hmm. So about three teaching rooms.
Yeah.
First, second grade was downstairs, as Mary. And the next floor, the second floor, was Bessie Benson. This is the one that I remember most.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other part of the second floor was O.T. Bailey, was the teacher. And he was a pretty stern fellow himself. Mm-hmm. I was kind of worried about him. I was kind of scared of him. He was always frowning and growling. So... And he had a little skeleton on his license plates on his car. And he just had a thing with me. He stayed with me. He did have a skeleton head with fire red eyes on his license plate. It told me a lot. And you could see it. Yeah, I could see it, envision his horns, so to speak. Really.
Yeah,
I did have that.
All of my schooling was in 3-room schools.
Well, all of it?
Yeah.
That sounded a lot.
Right. Well, up till high school.
Well, yeah. We didn't go there until junior high. But by the time I got to junior high, that's when we went to another school.
All right.
As a matter of fact, it was integrated.
Backing up, what was the name of the school over
there? Evans.
Evans School. There we go.
Mm-hmm. Evans Elementary School.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would they serve a lunch there? Did everybody bring lunch?
No, you should bring a sack.
Yeah.
If you have one, bring it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'd bring mustard sandwiches, but I didn't have anything else. It was like that.
Yeah.
It was just like that. They used to make fun of me. My family did. Mm-hmm. They used to make fun of me and my mustard sandwich. I gotta eat something. It really happened.
Our schooling was so disciplined and regimented, and I am not complaining. I think we got a better education in those little schools than maybe the kids are getting now.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, now it's crazy.
Yeah.
I can't believe some of the things are happening now.
Yeah. But I'm not blaming teachers now. I think they work at it real hard. But.
No, it's social structure is crazy.
Yeah.
It's just really crazy. I knew it's not the teachers because I became close to Mirabelle Elgin. I was afraid of her, mind you.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. She is. Mm-hmm. But she taught me. She really took me down. I was an ace reader in no time flat.
Huh. Did you do a lot of reading at home afterward? School, or you just became a very good reader? And
I read everything. Everything I get my hands on.
Yeah.
Even in study period, when I got high school, I was still, I tore through the encyclopedias and dictionaries, everything, all the reading material they had in there. And I wasn't worried about the magazines. I wasn't into that. I was mainly into the encyclopedias.
I still read encyclopedias.
Yeah, I find them to be pretty awesome.
If I'm eating alone, I have an encyclopedia in front of me.
I know the reading because I found them to be very exciting. If you want to get away from the country, you know, go to the encyclopedias.
Yeah.
And I was in them.
Yeah.
Oh, I was in them. Mm. I enjoyed them.
Did you use the Lewis Library at all, ever?
Yeah, but it was sparsely. If you're black, you weren't really expected to go to the Lewis Library.
I see.
No, not during my time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was just like that. I did a few times, now mind you. But...
You didn't feel welcome there?
No.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Has that changed? Do blacks in Glasgow use the library more now?
I'm not sure. I couldn't tell you that.
Yeah.
I wish I could tell you something, but mm-hmm. I could. I know that my dad's picture's in the library. My grandfather's picture's in the library.
How come? Why are there pictures in the library?
Well, one of them was about my dad, and it was with a wheelbarrow, that family truck, full of chitterlings.
Full of children?
Chitterlings.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Hog intestines.
Right, chitterlings. Gotcha.
So, whoever came up with that?
Yeah.
I don't think they had the greatest response. I mean,
yeah,
it's a mockery to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have to look at it like color, like it is.
Right.
Doesn't look like to me.
Yeah.
But we had to eat what we had to eat. He made sure we ate what we ate, and he made sure we had food to eat all the time. He gave his life doing that. I saw him work himself to death.
Yeah,
I did. I witnessed him work himself to death.
Now, you'd mentioned another day something about a connection with the Cherokee Indians.
But that day, there was a lot of connections around here with that. But it wasn't my family.
I see.
There was an error that I made when we were...
Okay,
when we
gotcha.
Were in some of the things that I picked up.
Yeah.
And I straightened that out with my family straightened that out.
But there were some Cherokee Indians who came back from Oklahoma and lived in the Glasgow area.
Absolutely.
Gotcha.
But there were even Missouri Indians here. A lot of people don't realize that. But they even have the burial mounds down by the airport in Columbia.
Hmm.
Some of those mounds, you're not familiar with that?
No.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they have the... You see the shape of the mounds and all that. They still have them. And they're down by the southern airport. And you're going down 63 South.
Right. I see.
And they still exist. And then there used to be a lot of arrowhead hunting when I was growing up from the creeks and all that. There was all kinds of arrowhead hunting. They had racks of arrowheads. I mean, just all sizes, shapes. Here, really big time down at this one bar in Glasgow. It used to be called the Keg.
Yeah.
And they had that there. From the time I was a kid, I remember all those arrowheads and things.
Did you go to Evans School through eighth grade, or when?
Through the seventh.
Seventh grade. And then did you maybe go up to Dalton or
Winfield? Junior high in Glasgow.
Okay. What year was that?
Now you go, got my computer running now.
I'm thinking when I came down here in 66,
yeah, that was
the first year that maybe the schools were integrated around here.
No.
No, the
schools. Oh, no. They were later. That was later. I came out of graduation in 65.
Okay.
And I had been there, and that's graduating from high school. So it had went on for, that's 4 years already, so it was 60 or 58, 59, something like that.
That the schools did integrate in here.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. It was a lot earlier than I realized. For some reason, I bet in my head that the Armstrong School did not integrate until 66.
It may be, that may be true.
Could be.
I don't mean, no.
Maybe not.
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Somehow that doesn't pay that up because...
Well, it should have integrated well before that, but I just...
Well, yeah, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I couldn't really pin that date down.
Right.
Because I never did really... I wasn't interested in that part. Yeah. I just missed that.
Yeah.
But...
Did you learn the trumpet while you were at school here in Glasgow then?
Absolutely. Okay. I started at junior high.
Mm-hmm.
I started at junior high. Another teacher I'll always admire, my music teacher.
No, my family was always impressed with your trumpet playing.
Your family knows about my
trumpet playing. I think you pulled it out and did a job for them one day.
I did. I knew I did, but the one place I was working for, over in Fayette.
Okay. All right.
Is that the one you're talking about?
No, just I don't remember when it was, but I know you
played. No, I was all over the place playing.
Okay.
Time.
Yeah.
I was all over, and I eventually played professionally. I was in the Marine Corps band. Mm-hmm. I used to play special funerals. For the early Vietnam vets that were getting killed coming home, I'd play taps for them.
Yeah.
You know, the color guard and all that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I done all that, but I played Marine Corps band before I went overseas. You know, overseas, they took my trumpet away from me and gave me a machine gun. And it was on to out in the jungle ever since then. But
now,
yeah.
When you finished high school here, then you started working locally at some things for a few years or not? Or were you working
when you were in high school? Yeah, I had a job at the factory. In this factory, they were making insulated sleeping bags and clothes, of the insulated clothing and stuff like that. But I didn't last long because I had a chance to go see the world. I took it and joined the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm missing something. It seemed like there was a lot of kids who went to high school at either Dalton, black kids, or Boonville.
But that was
before your time.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because if then when you left Evans, you had to go. It was Dalton. From Glasgow, everybody. I remember all the older people going to Dalton, one of my sisters. We had to catch the bus. She had to catch the bus to Dalton.
Okay.
And I distinctly remember that. She's deceased now. But I remember that well. It wasn't too far. It wasn't too far in separation between those two towns. That between Dalton and Integration, it wasn't just too long. And Dalton was a very small school. But, then I guess it wasn't so small. It was a big thing. They used to have all kinds of open houses there, celebrations every year. But I remember my sister and a bunch of people older, over 4 or 5 years older, maybe more than that were going to Dalton.
Okay. Yeah. My community in Wisconsin was Norwegians, and we did have one black farming family in our community up there in Wisconsin, and that was my only exposure to black folk. Mm-hmm. All through my life till we moved down here.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we moved down here is our first experience of Little Dixie, you might say. And it was a real shocker for our family. For instance, I remember we started going to the Methodist Church in Armstrong, and they started talking about, well, let's have a communal Easter service, and we'll invite all the churches to come and have a communal Easter service. And they talked about the different churches, and my mom piped up at the meeting and she said, y'all didn't mention the black church in Armstrong. And they all just went into a fervor over, no, we're not inviting the black church. And one lady actually got up, the discussion got kind of heated, and slapped my mother in the face.
Well, my goodness.
Well, so that was the end of that discussion.
I guess so. I do guess so. If I recall correctly, your dad lived right across the street.
Yeah.
From the church, didn't he?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
Still does, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's pretty ugly, huh?
Yeah.
But I can see it happening.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I can definitely see it happening.
Things were pretty tense.
Yeah, I can see it happening.
Another memory I have is when I first got to know you and Ray and Wayne, I asked the question of y'all once, who is your hero? And all three of you, and this, we were talking individually, so it's not like you were mimicking each other, but all three of you said that your hero was Martin.
Martin Luther King.
Martin Luther King, yeah.
Yeah, why? Well,
but to
they
me...
They had the chances. That's what we were into at that time. The Civil Rights Movement, to me, was big. It was a big, big thing in my life. Matter of fact, I was really juiced up by it.
Yeah.
And I took it to another level, as a matter of fact. We were all talking one night down on the corner. The young black guys. And that's where we were hanging out. Right now, it's in the corner right here. And I said, well, let's go shoot some pool.
Yeah.
And we never shot them. They won't let us shoot pool. I said, yeah, no, yes, they will. Because this already been taken care of in Washington. And I explained to them, they didn't have that giddy up and go and do anything, really. But I did. I had this fire. I said, no, we're going to shoot some pool. That's what we're going to do tonight. If y'all want to go, we go. We went, but I'm the leader. Everybody was kind of laid back, but me. So we walk into the pool hall. We used to go in there frequently just to buy some candy. But we never went past the counter right there.
Right.
And the old man Duck Sears, his wife was a school teacher. And he said, what can I do for you boys? And I spoke right up, so we came to shoot pool. Well, you boys don't shoot. No, we didn't shoot pool here. But now we do. We came to shoot pool tonight. Just like that. And he looked at me and he looked at the other fellows. Okay, you guys take that pool table in the back. The real nasty little pool table in the back. It was wonderful. It was really wonderful.
Oh.
And we was shooting pool every night after that.
Wow.
Yeah, damn a game. He coming right to ball every damn game.
What year would that have been?
Ah, man, you be talking, I must have been around 16. No, maybe, not, maybe, something like that.
Yeah.
Close.
So it's like 63 or something like that, 1963 maybe.
It was something like that.
Yeah. The thing that was interesting to me when I asked y'all who your hero was the way you said Martin. And you didn't say Martin Luther King, you said Martin, like he was somebody you personally knew.
I didn't know him personally. Huh. I mean, I felt that.
That's where you felt.
I was really into the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I followed him, I was avid following him.
Yeah.
Everything he done, I mean, come on now.
Right. Yeah.
Because there was so much repression.
Yeah.
And we could feel it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't invisible at all. We could feel it.
Yeah.
I can count the fights I had because of it.
Yeah.
And there's so many regrets I have about it, but when you live it, you can't help but feel it. And he definitely inspired me in so many ways. Still today. And then I have many more now. And this is a whole nother world, and wow. I can look back at all everything differently. And I do. Yeah. And here I am back.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I think maybe this is a good place to end the first session. And I want to go into your military experience, and it's up to you whether you want to do it now or whether you want to hold off.
It's on you. It's on you.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm still in my military experience now.
Yeah.
Really, really quite. I mean, it's all the paperwork, so yeah. I'm really into that.
Well, let's go ahead then, since I'm here. We'll start a new session here, and we'll call it Johnny Ward's Experience in the United States Military.
Yeah.
So, you enlisted in the Marines, or were you drafted?
No, I enlisted.
Okay.
I figured I had to go.
And was the main motivation you wanted to see the world and get out of Glasgow?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The only motivation I had was just, this. I have to do this. It's time for me to do it. I'm a child. And I did.
How old were you when you enlisted?
18.
18. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which was the age when you could do it on your own and they did. Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's how I saw it.
Yeah.
And I made a decision then.
Yeah. Now, the Vietnam War was hot and heavy at this time.
Well, but I didn't know that.
So you were aware.
I wasn't aware. I had never heard of Vietnam.
Wow.
At the time I did enlisted. All I knew is I saw the poster. This is a guy standing up with his Marine Corps uniform on. Join the Marines and see the world. And he never left me. I decided, I'm going to see the world. Because after Glasgow, that's a big, gigantic opportunity to see the world. When it was so impossible to even think like that prior to that.
Who did you talk to as a recruiter? Somebody down in Columbia?
No, right here in Glasgow.
Right here in Glasgow.
I don't know just how I hooked him up. I don't know. I just saw him parked on the corner one day, I think. Huh. Seems like it. My memory serves me right. That's what I thought. I saw, somewhere I was there. I saw the sign on the car, on the door, you know. And he had on his uniform and all that. And I asked him what was happening. What was he doing? He said he was visiting some people talking about recruitment. I want to go. And we sit down, start writing it up, right there, on the spot.
How long a time frame between that experience of signing up and heading off to boot camp? Was it about a month or not even that much?
It wasn't even that much. Well, I got rejected the first time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I got rejected. And the reason was, I had a fight in school.
Yeah.
My last year of school. And I didn't cause a fight. Another guy did. But it just happened like that. And I got charged with it. Okay, so they flunked me. I didn't get a degree. I didn't graduate.
Okay.
They said I have to come back the next semester and do that. Well, okay. And the next semester I was in the Marine Corps. So but they rejected me at first, then they called me back. But,
so, go ahead. Let me see if that's fair. You got in a fight, did not get a diploma,
mm-hmm.
and then you wanted to become a Marine, mm-hmm. and they wouldn't take you.
They did take me down to St. Louis, but ultimately I was denied.
Right.
And there were two reasons. One was because when I was a kid, I was paralyzed from the waist down from a sled accident. And I actually couldn't walk for a while.
Okay.
And finally I got it back and I was rolling again. But it always bothered me, even when I did. But they rejected me when I went down for that reason, and I didn't get a diploma.
Right. So how did you solve the diploma problem?
Well, I took a
GED thing or what?
Yeah, I did that. But I did that after I was in the military.
Okay.
But what happened was, I got a reference or two, one from Casey Jones, the local police.
Okay.
And he said I'd be the best thing you ever done, boy. And he might be right. I don't know. Today, though, I'm having all kinds of problems, so I don't know. He might have missed the boat a little bit. But it got me away. It didn't matter. And they had, little did I know at the time, that they had lowered the minimum standard IQ performance. So they didn't care about that. They just knocked the bottom out of it because of the draft. When they instituted the draft, they needed it because the the white guys were not, they didn't were not catering to Vietnam. They were running off to Canada
and college.
Yeah, and everywhere.
Getting college to
anybody to get away from. Yeah, right. And President Clinton went to England and so on. You know, people just run, nobody going.
Right.
So, and they weren't even honoring the draft. A lot of people, like Muhammad Ali, I'm not going to fight over there. People never call me a nigger.
Right.
And so on down the road, and yeah, he became one of my admired persons for his stance in that circumstance. Now I'm waking up. But then, but ultimately, it came down to, I'm getting out of here. That was my decision. And I had a chance to look at it, about all the people who were going to draft and so on. It was big news, I mean. The biggest thing going. But I was getting out of here.
Out of
Glasgow. Bigger than anything.
Right.
Yeah, to me. So I went. And then, my first day in boot camp, I heard of Vietnam. Huh. Yeah. And, wow. Where is that?
Wow. So all of a sudden you discovered that the world you were out to see was going to be Vietnam.
Well, some of it, I mean, it just had to shut and open it, because all I'm hearing now is about this place I never heard of.
Right.
Just never heard of it. I wasn't geographically aware at all.
Yeah.
To that level. And anyway, and everything, every word out of everybody's mouth at that point was Vietnam. And I'm in the Marine Corps, so. You know, they're gung-hoing it up and getting it going, and hey, this is what it is, so I gotta do what I gotta do, and I'm out of there, so.
Where did you go for boot camp?
San Diego. MCRD, Marine Corps Recruit Depot.
With the palm trees.
Yeah, with the palm trees.
It was like going to a different world.
It was absolutely a different world. It was absolutely a different world. I mean, wow. Yeah, and everybody's crazy. Especially the drill instructors.
Yeah. Did you enjoy boot camp at all?
Yeah, some days I did.
Yeah.
Because I'm just a hustler. I'm gone. I was hustling at it. There were some pretty good moments, I must say. You know, just the learning experience and
what are your memories of the, in the Navy we called him our company commander, the guy who was in charge of us, giving us our boot camp training. What was he called in the Marines?
I was a little different. He's a drill instructor.
Drill instructor.
Okay. Yeah, drill instructors, and they were horrible.
Horrible.
Oh, they were demons. Yeah, they were the demons. It was hard. They just had no rationale waking us up at 4 o'clock in the morning. We just went to sleep.
Right.
Now, Revelry, oh, no. And then there we go again. It was, yeah, that was the bane. I would call them the bane, because here they come again every day. They're there all the time. They're here all night tonight. Oh, this is crazy. It was pretty wild.
Were you in any kind of shape for what was about to hit you in basic training?
No, I was just completely surprised that it was going to be that wild. I was in shape, because I was all over the place. We had to work hard here. We used to work in the hay fields and tobacco fields and all this. So we were toughened up.
Yeah.
We were naturally toughened up. But just living was tough then. So we were tough. I was like, I can handle that part. I didn't worry about any of that. But the rude awakening, I was already about to graduate from boot camp. And, you know, I was already awake by then. I had made swallow, did all kinds of stuff. But I got this. And I had it. And I was always, I had my little handbook. I'm on down the road. I know what it is. I got the rules, buddy.
Yeah. There were maybe 100 guys in your training group, or weren't there that many? That the drill instructor.
Platoons. There were more platoons, but each platoon has its It's beginning and end.
Right.
Because you're gonna graduate as a platoon. And you're gonna work out as a platoon.
How big a group was that, do you think?
Some of that was around 128 maybe people. Maybe let me see. Yeah, because there were squads, four squads per platoon, but they would extend them the size in boot camp because they were drafting people right and left, and they were trying to get them out of there in 8 weeks.
Wow.
But they have 13 weeks of standard, you know. So they were trying to get them out quick and all this, and oversize them and all that. So it was a pretty rugged thing. And I didn't have any problem with it though.
Yeah.
I just didn't have any problem with it. I'm gonna see the world, so.
Yeah.
We can't wait to get out of here.
Right.
And when we graduated, a whole nother story. Here we come, well, straight to Camp Lejeune.
Wow.
After advanced boot training with the Camp Pendleton, which is up the road from the Marine Corps training depot in San Diego. So hey, that was nothing. Same thing, ride a bus, look for the up the hill, down the hill, and advanced infantry training and all that. Really crazy.
Did you go straight from San Diego to Camp Lejeune, or did you have a break at home for a week or anything like that?
We went to advanced infantry training. We had a break, yeah. But we did advanced infantry training at Camp Pendleton, which was, like I said, a bus ride up the road. And then I went to Camp Lejeune.
Now, what happened in advanced infantry training? What kind of training was that? Shooting a gun?
You're shooting a gun in boot camp.
Okay.
You had to qualify under with weapons in boot camp.
Right.
It was all guns, some kind of gun, rifle, pistol, automatic, semi-automatic weapons, all everything. All about it. Number one appliance, so to speak. But when you go to Camp Pendleton, advanced infantry training, well, you just do an advanced infantry, the marches are different. They're longer, they're more challenging,
right.
All kinds of stuff. And they're shooting a little close to you, excuse me. They're shooting a little close to you in advanced infantry training. I mean, it's live ammo in a lot of instances. But that's when you're really getting into it. And you're up the hill, down the hill, and it's a long way over the hill. And you're camping, you know, bivouacking and all this overnight. And
carrying packs with
you. Oh, you're doing all of that. You're doing all the hardcore stuff at that point.
Yeah.
And then it was off to Camp Lejeune for MOS, or wherever you were going, that's where you were off to that MOS training. Whatever your job was going to be, supposedly, that's where you were going to get the training for that. And in my case, it was Camp Lejeune for supply administrative training.
What supposedly was a supply administrator going to be doing?
Now, that's the guy that does inventory control.
Okay.
He keeps up with all the supplies. I mean, when I say all the supplies, I mean the backpack, and all the... It's like an armor. The armorer takes care of all the stuff that blows up and it goes bang. Supply admin man is taking care of everything you wear, your clothes, your socks, your ponchos, everything that you need, and the accessories and backpacks and so on.
Did you have any choice in taking that job on in that position?
No.
This is what you're gonna do.
I didn't want to, but it didn't matter. This is how this goes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you do what you're told and you're going down the road. Yeah. Pretty simple. They make it real simple. Mm-hmm. There's people more qualified than you to determine what you do. Yeah. And they're using your intelligence on your tests and whatnot. For what they think you can do. And they determined that. They didn't ask me what I wanted to do when I first went. No, it was all demanding. This is what you do. And that's what I done.
Was there any point before Camp Lejeune where you thought, maybe I didn't make a good choice here? Or were you pretty gung-ho going into Camp Lejeune
too? I didn't care. I was going away. I do that first. I mean, I got to do it. At that time, I was already, I'm done. There's no challenge at that point. I saw a lot of people that try to have mind changes and all that. No. That didn't go well. It didn't go well for them, so I didn't even try it. I didn't want that. Yeah. I'm just ready to go to my duty station, wherever that's going to be, and you're hoping. You're hoping for which one you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And, I got lucky. California was my first duty station, Marine Corps Supply Center, out of Camp Lejeune. That's where I went.
How long were you there at Camp Lejeune?
I was there approximately, maybe 40 days.
40 days, okay.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Something like that. Mm-hmm.
And from there, then you shipped out to Vietnam or not?
I went to California, Marine Corps Supply Center in Barstow, California.
Barstow, okay.
Yeah, in the Mojave Desert, close to Death Valley, as a matter of fact. 150 miles from Las Vegas. 132 from Los Angeles and in the desert.
When you were at Barstow, was there time off when you'd go to Las Vegas? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
So absolutely.
There was some freedom then.
Oh, yeah. There was you work all week and you're off on the weekend.
Okay.
Unless you had a duty on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And for most of the time, you're off on the weekend, we gone. We're going to Los Angeles or we're going to Las Vegas. We're getting out of here. And just the name of the game, Liberty Call is it.
Yeah.
And you're hoping you're getting a whole 3 days. Early out of there on Friday and the old dark 30 on Monday morning.
I'm thinking I pulled in about $250 a month when I was in the Navy. Now that was then in 1970. That's probably about what kind of wages you were pulling too, isn't it, or not?
Well,
remember it all?
Well, yeah, I was getting a better wage than that because I had made E4 pretty quickly.
Okay.
Matter of fact, very quickly.
E4, you say?
Yeah, it's corporal.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Yeah, non-commissioned officer right now, so that's cut above.
Yeah. No, I was not in the cut above. But, you know, what was there to spend money on? I had a roof over my head and food in my belly. I didn't have a phone.
Yeah. Well, we had even better than that where I was. I was in the Marine Corps Band in Boston, so.
Okay.
And that was a volunteer thing, and the general was supportive of the band master to recruit.
Yeah.
People. So a friend of mine, a guy had been in training with it in Camp Lejeune, had mentioned that he's in the Marine Corps band in Boston because he heard about it in an audition. And he happened to play trumpet too. So I went up and requested to go do an audition. Got it. Three notes. I was in. I started playing. They said, "You're good," and I was in.
Yeah.
And so all kinds of things. Meritorious awards, promotions, and all that stuff after that. Right. And then Vietnam came out.
Yeah. Listen, I think we'll call it good here. We've been going on for a good hour, and we'll pick up what it was like flying over the ocean to Vietnam another time.
Okay. We can do that. I don't have a problem with that.
Thanks, Johnny. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you. I hope it's rewarding. I hope it helps somebody.